Thank you. I would have left the slides up there, but yeah, I don't have any slides, but I instead tweeted a picture of you, so it's a different generation. I'm just kidding. Of course, yeah, Hamilton in that sense is a nice way to end of it, because it really is a sign of time if a most popular Broadway musical is about Hamilton, about Minister of Finance, and sort of a father of modern industrial policy, if you will. But I'm not going to talk about Hamilton, but I'm going to talk about a country and an institution, and also somewhat of a personal story. And because if you look at our book, the two of the editors work in Estonia, Tallinn, Estonia, which is not known for being a home of development economics or any economics other than Ragnar Nurkse. But so there is, so there must be an obvious reason other than sort of coincidence. And I think the reason really is about that for almost for 25 years, Estonia has been sort of an epitome or a poster country for neoliberal reforms. And I'm sure you here in Norway have also heard about it. But I just want to sort of tell you the story of Estonia in a very brief sort of brushstrokes, or very wide brushstrokes. And then I hope to actually end on a positive note, which I think might come as a surprise if the story is about neoliberalism. But so I hope to give you a keep you suspended or suspense. So Estonia became independent, as you might know, in 1992, regained independence from the Soviet Union in 1992, and we had right away elections. And the elections were won, to the surprise of many, by a young party, which consisted of also very young people. So they came to power, they formed the first coalition, and they had really young ministers. And the youngest was 27, and the prime minister was 32 years old. And most of them actually had studied history. And they had, especially the prime minister, had studied history of the interwar era, so the 1930s. But he had one flaw. He had only read one economics book. This happened to be Milton Friedman. And he also then later actually became a sort of honorable member, if you will, of the Mont Pelerin Society, of the main neoliberal sort of thinking realm, and became very proud student of Margaret Thatcher, recognized by her as her student, and got the Milton Friedman Prize and everything like that. So he really became the sort of the face of neoliberal reforms in the Eastern Europe and Russia and this area. And Estonia became also very successful by some indicators. You had a very high levels of growth. You had a reform, all these reform indexes. Estonia performed very, very well. And of course, until today, if you look at, you know, what is the most sort of important indicator in the European Union, of course, it has to do with public debt. So how much do you borrow as a public sector? And of course, Greece has the highest, and you can guess who has the lowest level. So it's Estonia. So Estonia still has, even today, this sort of, for a very long time, I think our prime minister was very proud to have, you know, whenever he went to Berlin, he always had dinner with Angela Merkel, because, you know, this is the same kind of sort of German thinking of austerity. But of course, also Estonia, as you might imagine, had all the sort of negative stories as well to tell, which we were not so proud to tell to the world. Like, we have one of the highest rates of HIV incurrence, we have one of the highest rates of prisoners in Europe, and one of the highest Gini indices. So we had also this undercurrent as well, but the sort of the face of the our success was incredibly well received and very well also sort of advertised around the world. And I think there was also two sort of side effects, almost, if you will, with this sort of neoliberal reforms that I think will become very important for the future in the next 10 years. And this is that the Estonian success story, so to say, was accompanied by the sort of rise and predominance of foreign-owned finance. So our financial sector is today is 95% is foreign-owned by banks from Sweden and Finland. And so this is actually a fate that many developing countries are now experiencing one way or another, that you essentially lose control over your financial sector because it is foreign-dominated, foreign-owned, or part of large conglomerates. And I think the other thing is that Estonia became, and still is, very sort of known for ICT and information technology. So I'm sure many of you have used Skype. which is an Estonian technology, if you will. So these two facts became sort of what for the elite were very, very important to show that we have a very stable foreign financial sector and we have high technology in the private sector, but also in the government sector. And so in this environment of very sort of strong neoliberal environment, Eric and other economists helped me to establish a department, which we did in 2004. And this actually became so successful that in 2010, by then the Minister of Economy, in a public forum, wanted to close us down. He said, "You have been so annoying that I would really be happy if the university would close you down." And in private conversation, he actually offered the university rector money to close us down. He offered, "If you close down the social sciences, we will actually fund your engineering departments with more money." And but you know, at the time already, during this public discussion, I told him that ministers tend to come and go, but academic departments tend to be quite sturdy and quite reliable in that sense. And as it happened, in 2017 or 2016, end of 2016, we had a new government was formed, and it is led by a former PhD student of ours. So all of a sudden, the tables have turned. So it's the, now we get the call from the Prime Minister to help with policy, to help with formulation of new ideas. And I think it is, as the Chinese, or at least I think it's a Chinese saying, that you know, if you sit long enough by the river, the corpse of your enemy will float by. So I think we have been sitting long enough by the river. And it is significant the new government is actually really sort of looking at the downsides of the neoliberal reform. So they are looking at increase the minimum wages, for instance. They are looking to reinstall the industrial policy and to look at these kind of things, to take up more loans, actually, to invest in public infrastructure, for instance, and also deal with minorities, such as Russian minority. So they are consciously sort of taking a look at these sort of neoliberal downside, if you will. And I think this is where Estonia becomes sort of an interesting and perhaps also an hopeful example. How do we deal with this kind of highly financialized, but also highly information technology-based capitalism? As you might have heard, McKinsey last year had a report out where they calculated that the value of global data is higher than the value of global trading goods. And then if you think about this, that this global data is owned by five or six companies, Apple's and Google's, and then you think that these companies are also trying to become banks, essentially. So you have a almost an unheard of concentration of capital. So think about if the land in the world were owned by five companies. I think we would all be up in arms and in the streets because it would be unthinkable. But this is where we're heading towards, this sort of a very highly financialized and very highly information technology-based capitalism. And I think that perhaps, or this is our hope, I think, that Estonia, with sort of trying to go against the current and becoming more leftist at these days, is perhaps also an example of how you can deal with this kind of highly financialized and highly information and technology-based capitalism. And perhaps our book serves as an example and also a source of inspiration for governments like in Estonia, but also governments all around the world. So thank you very much.